remembering. I can't remember what
we can share.
To mic this before.
I did mic it.
Okay, well, if we'll.
So they'll be able to hear on Zoom.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't. Thank you so much. No, I think this is good. Yeah. Maybe 11. Thank you so much, and I need it again tonight, but I'm meeting from at 4:45.
Okay, because I won't be here. I'll leave at 2:30.
Okay, so 10:30 then.
Okay, I'm going back to.
So you're saying.
You're all okay. It's they're okay to hear me.
I am trying to take full advantage of my resources as possible.
Everything on.
This is valid. And it's not going to.
No.
Thank you so much. Okay.
No, not at all.
All right.
Oh, that's okay. I did talk to him half an hour ago. He was planning on coming.
Well, he was feeding back last time when I was doing it, because remember, I had this.
Okay, okay.
So I had to put a microphone on it to. This may be setting up.
No, you've got mine.
Thank you. Yeah, it wasn't true. It was only this computer. Today is Wednesday.
His is 9501. Yeah.
Well.
All right, I'll be right back.
Okay, all right, thanks so much. Bye.
Indoors. Very indoors. It's like not only no windows, but no windows beyond that, or no windows beyond that. So Vicki, I'm not sitting next to you, so I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage if we're sharing any materials.
Oh, okay.
Can you move over?
No.
No?
No, I mean, we'll try it, but just so you know, I usually sit next to the president in case there's any information we need to.
Okay, well, you can always text me.
I mean, I can just yell right over to you.
Well, you can turn around and look at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, I think it's all good. I just need to hit record.
Recording in progress.
Okay.
All right.
And Ms. Chandra.
Chandra was going to call the, to do the roll calls, but she might not be back since she's doing double duty today as our AV team. I'll do it.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. So let's call the meeting to order at, what time is it? 9:05. We need the roll call first.
Okay. And I'll speak to the folks on the Zoom after that. Okay. Kim Fisher.
Here.
All right. Susan Fowler.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Georgiana Schuster.
Here.
And Vicki Nyswander.
Here.
All right, so folks on the Zoom, can you still hear us?
Yes.
Yay! Oh, and we can hear you. So please sign into the chat indicating your agency affiliation, if any, and I'm going to try to put the agenda on the screen so people can see it, but also dropping the whole packet into the chat so that that's part of the record. Okay, thanks.
I want to be projecting the screen. I mean, projecting the agenda on the screen.
Okay.
I don't think it'll show up there. It's just on the Zoom screen.
Okay. Well, that's partly there then. Okay, well, shall we just go ahead with approval of the agenda then? Lynn?
You can, yeah. Because folks in the room, hopefully you've all signed in, and hopefully everyone has access to the packet. So everyone can see the agenda. All right.
Okay. All right, very good.
Did you want to do roll call, Lynn?
I did.
Okay, perfect. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right, so we need a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
All right, any discussion?
Wait, who moved and who?
Yo.
Ann.
Ann did, and.
Susan.
Susan seconded.
Thank you, okay.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? No. Okay, moving on. schedules are included, the acronyms and glossary is included in the packet. Do we have any citizen input or public participation?
Vicki, is your microphone on?
It is.
Okay.
Do I need to move it closer?
I'm not sure.
Let me try moving it closer.
I just want to hear you screamingly loud.
I will project.
Is that better?
I am assuming we don't have any public participation, so we'll just move on from this point. And chairperson's comments. I appreciate all the work that the staff has been doing. I love reading the reports and all the things that everybody's involved in. I think I've mentioned that before, but it has been a pleasure being a part of this group, and I look forward to many great things. That's me.
Okay.
Lynn.
So thank you for, so can you all, am I coming through the, okay.
That is working.
Okay, good. It's just not like blazingly loud like I want it. Okay. Just thank you for appreciating the packet. I got to do, so like the most exciting thing ever happened this year, and that is thank you. Everybody got their reports done on time and with such a high degree of accuracy that Kim Bowdry and I were able to do actually an analysis of some of it. It was a quick analysis, but it was the first time we've been able to do that. So I was like, thank you, you guys. And I don't know, you know, where we'll go with it next, but I've just always felt that we have the benefit of data which are comparable from year to year. So why don't we take a look at it and see what we can find? So anyway, that was like, I don't know why, but that was like a dream come true for me. So I'm very proud of that part of the packet. And also, as I was talking with Mrs. Nicewander before the meeting, attended the Going Home Coalition meeting yesterday. I think some of y'all were on it, maybe. It was a meeting with Equip for Equality, and it was just so great to be in a room of like-minded people who don't need to be updated or educated on the issues because they're all right there. It was great. And the topic, the theme that kept coming up was, how are we going to get the Department of Justice to come to Illinois and, you know, finally do something about these institutions? So, you know, I don't know if that's, I think I need to raise hopeful topics every once in a while, and I would say that was like the most hopeful thing yesterday, plus my dream come true report that's in the packet. So anyway, so thank you, and also, you know, much appreciation to Chandra Somerville and to the gentleman who just came down and fixed our technology problems because we're rolling. That was such a relief. Okay.
All right. Then the next thing on the agenda. Oops. Can you hear me now? Okay, very good. The next thing on the agenda is the approval of the meeting minutes from last month. Need a motion?
I will motion to approve.
Thank you, Georgiana. Second?
Second.
Ian, thank you very much. And any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, very good. Vendor invoice list. So we need a motion to approve the vendor invoice list. And a second?
I so move.
Second.
All right. Did you get both of those? All right. Any discussion on the invoice list? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? I don't even think I have to ask that. Okay. Staff reports. We're just zooming right through this, aren't we? Any comments or questions on the staff reports? All right, then. New business, the three-year plan Vicki. With draft objectives.
Vicki.
What? There is?
I have a
question. Oh, you have a question. Okay.
So, thanks. Thank you. So I just had a question about on page 32, about the new site, website accessibility, and that there are maybe like a opportunity for self-advocates to give feedback on that. So I just wanted to know more about that. Yeah, that's exciting.
It was just a nice conversation. There's a lady who's been maintaining the expo website and then a much lesser known website for the Alliance for Inclusion and Respect. That was designed to be a store, and then we ran into problems with how do we accept payments and manage that. So it's really just, it's updated with interesting anti-stigma related stuff. So she does that, doesn't change too much from year to year. She helps out a little more with the expo when they needed to do some virtual events. So, you know, we've found her to be a really, really dedicated partner. Like, she really seems to understand about the centering the voices of people with disabilities and all these activities. And so I said, what would it cost if we added another website that was just that, you know, had a name that was easy to remember and locate, and then just blocks that linked you to sites that are not easy to locate but that are updated and contain the information that the self-advocates told us they would like to be able to find. Mm-hmm. I think some of their comments had also to do with wanting extra information, so that's a problem that's kind of outside of the website. But she said, I would love to do that, but only if they tell me what they want. So, you know, if the self-advocates wanted to move into that direction, I think that a project like that could be affordable, even through our shared administrative budget, but certainly through the special initiatives. But I just love that her condition was, it has to be directed by them. Yay!
So. I have another question. Maybe it's under this category, but do we have any information about how 988 is rolling out in this county?
The 988 it started with two different call centers on behalf of Champaign County. So the call center run through what's now Rosecrans, which has been funded by the Mental Health Board for decades, was initially funded by the state to be the 988 call center. But that has shifted, so now it's all being done through PATH. And there is another PATH report, but it's not in this packet. It'll be in the November packet. We just got it yesterday. So, you know, they'll tell us about the last 3 months of statistics on 211, but 988 is part of that now for them. And when you say implementation of 988, wow, that is a big, big topic.
It is.
Because it isn't. I think the feds thought they had this really great idea, and then they're really patting themselves on the back in D.C. about it with very little regard to how it's actually can be implemented in counties, and especially in counties that were already doing it, you know? Like, now you're layering on another system. So we have those additional problems here of the transfer of information.
Is 988 ultimately going to take the place of 211? Don't know.
I mean, 211 was a project of the United Ways across the country. 211 was never adopted in Cook County. Maybe it would be. I think they had 311. So I think to layer 988 on top of a system like 211 that isn't functional across the country as they had meant for it to be, but, like, I don't know if that is any worse than trying to roll out 988 across the country with no structure. So, yeah, I think that's...
It's another evidence of our broken system.
Yeah. The organization, there's a private organization behind the design of the Crisis Now model, and I can't remember their name, but they are federally, they're in charge of the 988 system, or at least the design of it. So the relationship, I mean, this is a lot of weeds, sorry, you guys. But, like, the relationship between that organization that was doing the National Suicide Lifeline before, and then 988 is the National Suicide Lifeline, but expanded. That organization had a good relationship with federal agencies such as SAMHSA, and there was a rule that if a state didn't have 60% participation in that National Suicide Lifeline, they couldn't qualify for SAMHSA suicide prevention funding. SAMHSA is a federal agency mm-hmm. that does it, you know, prevention education. So, and Illinois couldn't because Cook County wouldn't do it. So, yeah, so, I mean, because Cook County had to come up with their own system. So we're in the moment of where all of these systems need that are layered on top of each other need to be integrated for there really to be a nationwide mental health crisis line. And then on top of that, there have to be crisis services after the crisis line.
Somebody calls and then you say, what? Well, there's nothing to do. We can't help you.
The appointment is in February.
The what? Say that again?
I said the next available appointment is in February.
Well, so thank you for bringing it up. I know there's a lot more on the agenda, but I get pretty steamed when I hear that people in D.C. are proud of themselves for all they've done with 988, because I feel like, come here. I mean, people have been working on crisis services for a long time without any help from the federal agencies. So, anyway.
One more. Go for it.
Okay. One more. So I just wanted to highlight, it seemed like there's still a need for volunteers for the Disability Expo. And I think Leon mentioned it's like kind of the middle of the day. Is that and there's a link to, in Kim's report, for the, I guess, the sign-up genius. So, and we got, I'm a little behind on my email, so do we got a email of that, yeah, so we can just get the link there if we need. Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Just want to double check. Okay, moving on to the three-year plan with draft objectives, which starts on page 46. Just a couple of notes for me on this is that I really appreciate the all the language changes, noting the importance of input from people with disabilities. That is throughout this, and I think that that is a great addition. I wonder if we can find a way to get input from people who aren't quite as articulate as the people that we listened to a couple of months ago, the people who are nonverbal and have, you know, opinions as well, but theirs are not included in what we do. So what I was thinking is, do we want to look at or get information from all the person-centered plans that are being done? You know, what are people wanting from that group? I don't know. I don't know if that's even possible, but...
Well, what if we put an objective in for that?
And we can create an objective for that, for getting input from the person-centered plans, and then maybe we won't meet our objective, but at least we'll be...
At least we'll be trying.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on this? Yeah, Anne.
I very much appreciate your wanting to include everyone. I don't know if person-centered plans are confidential. I do not know that. But I would assume that they are. So getting input from them, the question is, how do you get permission to get input?
We as staff have access to that confidential information. We just have to ask the agencies for access to it, but you know there are releases of authorizing that information to be shared. We would not publish it.
Yeah. You wouldn't put names on it.
But we could say a repeating theme is people want to be able to hang out with their friends more. I mean, I don't know what we would discover because we haven't tried. Okay. But I think that's... Yeah, I'm sorry.
So I just had a question about maybe if the objective should be to assess the feasibility of doing this rather than immediately doing it. Not that I don't want you to do it, but make sure. I don't know how many person-centered plans there are, Vicki. Are there hundreds or 50 or?
I have no, well.
Almost 400.
There should be a person-centered plan for every person who is served in this county, I would think.
And so if it's the ISC person-centered plan, is that what we're talking about?
Anything that we fund, we could ask.
Okay. Well, I would start with the feasibility because with the change in ISC, which we can get into later, I'm not sure that there are functional plans for many
people.
Well,
and maybe it's an exploration at this time and an opportunity to look at them and say, are we really considering what people really want and need? So, yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, Susan.
I'd send you emails all the time anyway, but I might send a draft of an objective for you all to revise until it sounds right.
Yeah. And a second thing that I came to mind when I was reading through this is the idea of evidence-based practices. And a question I have is, do we ask for the evidence when we're looking at a particular program? Does anybody submit research or studies or anything like that? I don't know.
That's a required question in the applications for funding. And if an organization is not using an evidence-based model, but an innovative model or a promising practice, they are asked to cite whatever research or whatever the foundation is for the model that they're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some evidence-based practices, but not many. But there is a requirement to list it and give us a link to the work.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any other? Yeah. Susan.
Thanks. So I'm not sure if it fits under Goal 1 or Goal 9 or maybe a different goal. Goal 1 is coordinated and accessible continuum of services and supports. And Goal 9 is increased influence on policy at the local, state, and federal level. I was concerned as a parent of a young adult with the home-based waiver program to get a letter from the ISC that's now in charge of services last week. And the letter basically said, we're the new game in town. Here's our phone number if you need anything. I haven't heard from an ISC rep since maybe January. And I thought that, you know, we were supposed to have contact maybe 3 or 4 times a year. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's a transition, and I know that transitions are difficult, but I think this one needs to be monitored because the abruptness of the letter, and I brought a copy of it, was really surprising and not very reassuring.
Okay.
I also then saw a letter that was sent by a parent saying, an individual with disabilities whose name was on the selection list for the home-based waiver, and this individual had been told he'd probably have to wait until maybe early next year because of all the crises in Champaign County. And this individual responded through a case manager that I also use by saying, why should I wait another? I've already waited 7 years. Why should I have to wait more months? And then the response from the agency to that letter was, we're doing everything we can, it just takes time. I don't think that's a suitable response for coordination of services if someone's name has finally been called from the PUNS list and they're told that, well, we'll get you when we can, essentially was the message. So I'm just concerned about what's happening at the state level that's influencing local services, and I'm not sure how we state that as a goal, but monitoring maybe the whole system of independent service coordination and how it's funded in the state might be worth tracking.
Would you be comfortable if I put that under Goal 9, which is where we have a lot of advocacy activities listed there, but this is certainly this is really one of the day. And, you know, it relates to even our state association has a very hard time having a real conversation with the leadership of DDD.
Mm-hmm.
And you might remember a few months ago we sent them a very bossy letter and got no response. And, you know, we usually will invite them to come and talk to our committee or full membership. And then if they come, it's kind of a lecture. This is like our house is on fire.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
So, like, you can actually, like, get some feedback instead of just telling us how great it is to have all these SODCs. So anyway.
I'm just guessing that it might have to do with lack of staff there, because we have the same ISC representative working with our daughter, and there was no lag in services at all. Next meeting that we had scheduled went right on time. So it's very.
I mean,
I'm not doubting you.
Yeah, I'm going to just submit to Lynn or to you maybe a copy of the letter. It was just, it was concerning. And I've just made two copies. I haven't called to say, okay, I'd like to have a meeting because life is busy, but still.
Yeah.
Things are okay right now.
Well, but that's good, I guess. Anything else on the three-year plan? All right, then, let's move on to the CLC and related trainings. And I understand Chandra's going to give us a little bit of an overview there.
I'm so sorry. I don't understand these mics. She is going to speak to us through the Zoom. I want to apologize first. Her document had a beautiful title, and in my attempt to use the latest version of Adobe Acrobat products, her title got obliterated. So you can see, starting on page 60, there was once a really beautiful title there. Anyway,
there's
title. This is my fault. It was something like, she can tell us. I think she's ready to roll if you are. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I am ready. Good morning, everyone. I trust you all can hear me well through the speakers that are in the room.
Any questions for Chandra?
I have a question. This is Georgiana. My question is, for an agency that's required to provide these trainings, where are the trainings coming from? Are they all coming from Chandra, or are there lots of places offering training, and are all these places approved for training?
So there are a lot of trainings that are online, and then organizations will be able to decide what they need for them. No, I do not do all of the trainings, to answer your questions. And they do not have to go through like a approval process from me, because we do not get into the day-to-day of what the actual training content is. My hope is, though, that as a result of the training, that they would do implementation of practices that would then begin to change. I did have to do a desk review with a particular organization because I was noticing that their CLC plan had remained the same for the past 5 years, like no actions had changed. And so, but in their quarterly reporting, they were reporting all of these different trainings that they were taking. So I sat down with them and provided them with some support on how it can begin to mirror what they actually can begin to transform and change those actions. They did not know how to do it, and so that in my role, I'm able to provide that support to them. Georgiana, did that answer your question?
Yes, I think so. Basically, you said you don't do all the trainings, and that the trainings do not need to be approved by this, by the DDB or the MHB. But
no.
Are there a lot of, I don't know, entities out there that claim to be trainers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there are a lot of entities. But a lot of them are not local. They are oftentimes virtual. So, for example, there are some organizations that utilize the cultural competency training and self-paced things that the state does, because they may not have the capacity in their budget to bring in a trainer from outside in the community. And as a part of my role, I am available to provide training based on their cultural competence assessments and what they do in different areas where they might need additional support.
I would imagine that an agency that is new to us, that is just starting to receive funding, probably asks for a lot of help in this area.
It just depends on where they are in their journey.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, there are a lot of people that come very well equipped on how to keep families culture centered. They review the cultural competence standards, and they are actually able to really ensure that they are responsive to the people that they are serving, and also ensuring that there's quality care provided to the families of marginalized communities.
Okay, I have no more questions.
Any other questions for Chandra?
Yeah. Not really questions, but so first, thank you so much for walking us through this report. Chandra, it's really great. I also thank you for your explanation about why we're sticking with cultural competence and the language behind that, as opposed to DEIA work, one focusing on family versus focusing on institutions. So I really appreciate the language you put behind that. Can you just go into a little bit more about the information we might receive next month about anti-racist policies and practices, and kind of what I think I was listening, but I didn't process through all that information. Can you just review it again?
Yes.
Thank you.
So I'm going to provide you all with a report that was provided. It was a survey of findings. And so next month, I'm going to just provide you that report that outlines.
Thank you so much.
Other questions? Thank you, Chandra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to utilization summaries and demographic data. You see the charts in your packet, and if there are any questions on that or comments, now would be the time. Starting on page 64. Okay. Anything? No? All right. We'll move on.
I just thought it was very informative because being new to the board, it was good to read about what has happened. And so I appreciate the report.
Yes, I totally agree with that. On page 76, with the pie charts, which I also appreciate because you can just look at a pie chart, you don't have to read anything. I just had a question about the reports on page 76, because one of them, this is ages, one of them shows CCDDB funded program client age data, which shows that 79% of the clients are between the ages of 19 and 59, which, you know, okay, we're serving adults, not children so much and not elders so much. And then right below that is the CMHB IDD funded program, which is all children. Lynn, can you explain what those are related to, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, okay.
No, I just have to. This is an opportunity to practice being brief. The Mental Health Board has a commitment to developmental disability services because that's in their statute. And when the DD Board was founded many years after the Mental Health Board, there became an intergovernmental agreement to set a number to what the Mental Health Board's DD obligation should be. And it's based on the levy at the time plus growth each year and or decrease, which hasn't happened yet. So right now it ends up being, it's each year it's about 16 or 17% of what the Mental Health Board allocates to agencies in total. And they have, maybe a few years ago, because there were some board members on the Mental Health Board at the time who are in the room now as DD board members, who had a lot of knowledge about early childhood, the mental health and developmental issues of early childhood. So the Mental Health Board chose to focus its developmental disabilities investments into that population, and we've been lucky so far that it's roughly enough money to cover it, but the Mental Health Board could take on other DD contracts. So I'm sort of expecting that next year in PY25 we might see a program for adults funded by the Mental Health Board. But Kim collects all the same data regardless of which board funds it. It just happens to be, it's landing with the Mental Health Board because of other programs that they fund that have a mental health component. And that, you know, just happened to be the expertise of many board members. Still, even now that the two of you are over here, there is still, you know, I think it's because of where we live. Mm-hmm. So there is a funny thing about that data, which you didn't ask, which I thought you might ask, why are there any adults in that cohort? And that is, there are some supportive services for the parents. So, the 0%. That's a very small
fraction.
Like the N is really large, so I think that's actually like 20 people that coming to 0%. But they are parents who needed support from those programs. So that's kind of cool. All right.
Other questions? All right, then.
I just have another comment.
Oh, sure.
Under the category of positivity. I know we've had concern about whether people outside of Champaign-Urbana are being served, and it looks like, from these pie charts, it looks like they are. So I just wanted to point that out.
No, they're not.
What?
No, outside of Champaign-Urbana, in the county.
In the county.
Not Champaign. Did I say Champaign County? Okay.
Suburban.
People in the county that do not live in C-U, okay, are getting served. And I'm, the pie charts make that pretty easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know in terms of the racial, cultural background, if we're representative of what our population is, because I don't really know exactly what the population numbers are. It looks pretty good, but I'm not sure. So, but I love those pie charts. They're good.
So
and the verbal descriptions.
So the residency data are interesting. There's a tiny shift, and that I think, like, I appreciate you mentioning that, you know, rural residents are being served, but there's a tiny shift that's really important underneath this, and that is more people in Rantoul, which is not rural, but there has been for years and years really a challenge to reach residents of northern Champaign County, and it looks like the programs are doing it. There's a shift in DD-funded and mental health board-funded toward more services in Rantoul, so I wanted to... You're talking about positive comments. I thought that one was really worth calling out. I don't think I made a big deal about it in here, but I should have done. And then with the distribution of racial and ethnic data, I sometimes don't want to compare with general population because a lot of what's underneath these services are we should be focused on people who don't have any other insurance first. And so there, that could be... Not that issue might not be equally distributed across ethnic and racial categories. That, you know, that's what this fund is sort of there to pick up the gaps. Not necessarily it should and could also be used to do really great things that the state's not willing to do. But it does, you know, attempt to reach people who don't have any other sources of payment. So I think we could do a general population comparison. I think we would find that at least Black African American is higher than the general population distribution. I think we're 20% in one of these, 25% in another, and that's much higher than general population. But we might find that it when we bring in other sources of insurance, that it's much more level. Anyway, okay. Does that make sense?
Okay. Other questions or comments? All right, then. Let's go on to old business evaluation capacity building project. And are we getting an update from the Family Resiliency Center?
Yeah, hi, I'm Dana, here with the update from the group. Yeah, so what we've done is between October 6th and the 16th, we launched the pre-group level assessment survey, and the point of that was to help guide the needs of agency staff when we have an in-person group level assessment. And in that assessment, you know, we'll discuss some of these important topics that were brought up by the people who completed the pre-GLA survey, and then that'll allow us to break out into smaller groups, come up with themes, and then also develop actionable items, you know, that are important to agency staff. So it's a big collaborative effort that'll be in person. And so far, we've had 49 people complete this, we distributed to 49 people, and then 22 people completed the survey, and then it was represented by a broad group of agencies, which was really encouraging. There were some directors, coordinators, therapists, and so on who did it as well. There seemed to be a lot of enthusiasm there. People really took the time to complete the survey. And it looks like it'll be like around the first week of November that we will have this in-person group level assessment. And then we're just waiting for a few people to complete the survey before we solidify that date. So that is our update there. But we're really excited to start working with folks and collaborating to see how best we can work together to meet agency needs.
Any questions or comments? All right. Well, thank you for the update.
Yeah, thank you.
Next thing on old business is the expo update. We've talked a little bit about that. Is there anything beyond the packet information that we need to know? Volunteer if possible. Is that the message?
Okay. I think so. I think that it's become more difficult to do this over the years for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is positive, and that's because others have started doing resource fairs, and good for them. We need more resource fairs, but it's kind of the manpower and the sponsorship resources are lower than we've ever seen. So any volunteer help will be much appreciated. I thought it was really cool that they have this many exhibitors so far, and they added a couple. They added two after they sent this map in for us to publish. So it's a full house this year. Yay. I mean, that's really great. And most of the exhibitors are nonprofit, which pay a very much lower fee. So that's part of it. But in the spirit of what this thing is for, okay. I'm much more concerned about the people power than I am about sponsorships. So anyway.
All right. I think we're at the point in the agenda where we're looking for our success stories and other agency information. Anybody have anything to share?
All right. Well, you might just get my mask hanging from my ear because it seems very tangled. Yeah, okay, there we go. I'm Becca with Community Choices. Just to sort of follow up on the comment about the expo, we are still looking for volunteers. We are actually doing pretty well. We need people especially to be door greeters throughout the day. That was one of the roles that didn't get a lot of signups. It's always interesting to see kind of which which places kind of fill up really fast and which places we still, you know, need a few more people. So I'm happy to share that link with all of you to the sign up afterward, or it may be in your minutes and things from before. But that is coming together. I think we will, worst case scenario, it will be fine, and probably it will be good, but we do need a few more folks for sure. And then just a couple, just kind of quick success stories from us. We had two really sort of great employment stories I wanted to share. And one of them was about a young woman that we have worked with to find a job periodically or consistently for 2 years, three maybe. And she was really interested in being a baker. That was like her dream job. And she's very good at it. she didn't have any experience in a professional kitchen, which can be a barrier to working in a professional kitchen, of course. We were able to help her find a job at a small bakery about a year ago. And unfortunately, that business sort of imploded in and of itself, and she wasn't, it didn't end well, not due to any of her own faults, but it took a while to sort of help her find a new thing. And I'm happy to report that I believe it was early last month she got hired at Reg Cakes, which is the gluten-free bakery that's it has been in Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, and it's just about to move to Savoy, and she's doing just amazing and really loves it. And the people there seem to have really like welcomed her in, and so it's really great to see her, fingers crossed, hopefully settled in a place that can be sort of a work community for her for hopefully a long time. And also, good on Reg Cakes if you need any gluten-free baked goods. We'd love to give them a shout out. And the other story is somebody else who we worked with over a long period of time to help find a position. She's somebody who came to us sort of right out of high school. She didn't have a lot of work experience at all. She and her family were a little bit sort of trepidatious about her being on her own in the community, in a workplace. Like, she'd had some bad experiences in school, which is true of many, many of the people that we all know and work with. And those, I think, had made it hard for her to feel, safe and confident out in the world. And we, spent a long time helping her do some various volunteer positions. you know, a couple paid positions here and there, and about, I think it was early summer, June, May, June, she was hired at Big Grove doing some of the sort of the side work there, and it has just been night and day. She's like, she's doing so great, and she, when she talks about it, her face just lights up, and you know, when our employment specialist goes in to kind of check on how things are going, it seems like the other people there have also just really welcomed her in. And so I think both of those things are really just sort of like a testament to, sometimes it's not successful, but then it's, that's just kind of one of the steps on the sort of path forward. And so it's been really wonderful to see both of those kind of success stories like come to fruition a little bit, and hopefully that continues. It's been great to see sort of those individuals who have those roles like really feel so you know, accomplished in doing that. And it's also really, you know, like, I think employment is one of the roles where for the staff too, to sort of like, you know, they experience some of that sort of rejection over and over again. And so it's also really great to see our staff, you know, sort of be able to celebrate with those people and say like, hey, you know, like, we did this together. So anyway, I obviously am very pleased about both of those things. So I'm going on. And then the other thing I just wanted to share was we had a group of three self-advocates and a couple staff go to the Speak Up, Speak Out rally a couple weeks ago in Springfield. And it, you know, I think they had a really great experience. It seems to have sort of enlivened a little bit more interest and enthusiasm for kind of attending some of those statewide kind of advocacy events. And we have at least one person who's signed up to go next week to the Dignity and Pay rally that's going to be in the Capitol on the 25th. So we're really excited to see that and kind of see that kind of coming back since the pandemic. So.
Good morning, Annette Becker from DSC. I'm going to start with an employment success story, but on the opposite end. We have had a few people retire that we've supported for a long time, and one gentleman, Alan, retired after many, many years of receiving support from us. And, you know, during that transition, it's important to kind of look at what supports are available after retirement. And so his CLP, his community living person, has started to increase time with him. And so he's transitioning very successfully into the post-employment world. And we had a retirement party for him, which was huge because he doesn't like attention. And he's already talking about all the reading he's doing and going out for lunch, and so we're planning on keeping him engaged. Also, for our Community First program, I've talked about how we have groups that run a cycle of 4 months, and they're very well planned out. We have kind of a curriculum. We have an outline every week, but we know we also have to maintain some level of fluidity so that we can respond to requests from the program participants. That's how Comic-Con happened. Very recently, we had a request to do a Taylor Swift bracelet making party. So we said, of course, why not? So we're just in the beginning stages of that. And I'm guessing everybody knows that people who go to the Taylor Swift concerts, they exchange bracelets with lines from her songs, etc. So anyway, you know, keep your social calendar open. We are opening that to the community. You know, maybe we'll have 50, maybe we'll have 2,000. You just never know. She's very, very popular. So anyway, just, you know, maintain that flexibility. Thank you.
If you're opening it to the community, you better buy a lot of beads.
We have a contributor on the Zoom. Is everybody in the room done? Okay. Is it okay to move to the Zoom participants? All right. Mel Young has her hand up.
as she has accepted that position. And another thing that I want to, go ahead, Paula.
And I own my own PAs. I could be on the base waiting, but I'm on the actual waiting. I say I'm on to be. And I'm on the cross because of my disability.
And the other thing I want to share with everyone, I don't know if everyone knows that at the iHotel today, there will be a conference about the sub-minimum wage to move sub-minimum wage to competitive integrated employment. It's a project for 5 years that the state of Illinois is doing for that. They gave DRS $14 million for individuals with disability from sheltered workshop to community employment. They will have that going on at the iHotel this afternoon and all day tomorrow. So I just wanted to share that with everybody. So other than that, that's us at PACE. Thank you so much for letting us share.
Congratulations to both of you. Paula, I'm sure you'll be great at that position. And congratulations to you as well, Mel. What question for you, Mel? Who is sponsoring that conference at the iHotel today?
So it is actually it's a project that is partnered with UIUC.
Okay.
So anyone that's it was invited to everybody that I think it's UIUC that's sponsoring that because it's at the iHotel.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody else on Zoom?
If anyone wants me to share that link and stuff, I could share it and then forward to you. I know it's today and tomorrow and stuff, so I'm planning to go. So you can always forward it to Kim and Lynn if anyone wants.
Yeah, please share. Okay, let's move on to, where are we? County Board input. No Leah today. Do you have anything for us, Lynn? All right. And board announcements and Champaign County Mental Health Board input.
They will meet this evening. Last month they were one person shy of a quorum, so they got a really thick board packet because it's sort of piling up. There are so many circumstances that make it hard for people to do in-person meetings. I'm really sorry that we're obligated to do that. So we don't know. Hopefully we'll have a quorum tonight and can get through the business. But it's very similar to what y'all are doing tonight or this morning, and then plus what you did in September. So,
skipped something here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I skipped something. I skipped board to board reports, number 15, page 89 and 90. So are we at a point where we are going to be selecting or deciding on whether or not we are doing this liaison?
Yeah. See, I'm so glad you remembered that. So we have put together a little chart, and then we also put together draft guidelines for liaison service if you choose to do it. But you don't have to do it this way at all. Or even at all, but it was a suggestion that you brought up at the study session, and so this is really an opportunity for you all to discuss. And then if you want to give feedback now or even after the meeting as to whether we should continue to include these things in the packet or how you want to do this. But there is I brought an invitation to one of the agency's events that's coming up, because I think those are the kind of things that might be kind of cool for board members to do, just it's after hours, and there are snacks. Those are good. Those are nice things to do. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Go ahead. Just speaking personally, for this size board and for this configuration board, I don't feel the need to do this. I feel like we have very good communication. I really appreciate the input that agencies have every month when we have our meeting. I know they're open if we want to visit with them or contact them. They're open. I don't feel like I need to put something else on my agenda, and especially attending their board meetings. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Having been on the mental health board where I did attend as a liaison, it was a plus and minus experience. Some of the boards, you know, wondered why I was there. Some of the boards were welcoming. There were so many agencies that we needed to learn and keep a pulse on that I think it was important for the mental health board. But the amount of information that we get, I agree with Anne, just in our board meetings from agencies seems more than sufficient. And if we have questions, I think we can direct them to the agency. So I don't see a need to add onto our calendars either.
What do you think, Georgiana?
I would agree. I don't think we should. I mean, we can be unofficial liaisons, mm-hmm. but not official liaisons.
Okay, so I'll argue on the other side. Okay. So having been part of, so this idea I had, because I was part of the Evanston Mental Health Board, and we had, you know, liaisons roles. I agree that we did it in that agency, or in that board, we had a lot of agencies to kind of keep track of. We actually never went to the board meetings. It was more of a visit with the agencies. We could meet with people who were served. We could meet with staff just to get a personal update on the things that they're doing. We could also ask questions based on other board members who maybe had questions and bring it to the agency. So we did it twice a year, had a twice a year visit. And so it was just twice a year we updated the board on things. So, yeah, I don't necessarily think we need to be at their board meetings, but personally, I think it would be beneficial to actually go and meet with folks who are being served and supported by the agencies, and then to get an update from the agencies. It's like 2 hours, you know, what we did was like about 2 hours a year to meet with the agencies, or, you know, 2 hours per agency, so.
Okay.
So I would argue that it would be a good benefit, but
okay.
I think I might be overruled.
So we have some agency people here. Can I ask, does anybody think that it would be beneficial to have a DD board meeting, DD board member working with you more closely? Anybody have an opinion there? Patty's got an opinion.
Patty Walters at DSC. We would welcome it. I mean, I think there's, when there's a new board member, we typically meet with someone if they're not real familiar with us. Danielle and I will meet and then we'll do a tour, or people, you know, they have access to the directors. I think there is a lot of information shared here. I think there's a lot in the quarterly reports, and I don't know if that's the best way to share that information. We've kind of talked about that in the past. So I think we'd be open. I think the board meetings are more functional and not necessarily Q&A and, mm-hmm. and learning about stuff like what you're suggesting. And I think the minutes are provided every month anyway, right? So, I mean, I think you gather lots of information, and it's not necessarily the face-to-face that you would find beneficial. So, I mean, I would guess that most agencies would be welcome and open to that. So, my two cents. So.
Any other comments here?
Yeah, I would, sorry, I would really probably echo the same thing. I think we'd be happy to have an official kind of liaison role, and also want to make sure you guys all know that you'd be more than welcome to, you know, attend events, come and have a one-on-one meeting. If you have questions, I'm always available. So I think in a formalized way, that's great, and also in an informal way would be totally fine too. I agree with Patty. I think that maybe the board meetings are a lot of kind of like sort of day-to-day kind of working through the business of things, which could be helpful for you. I don't know that it would be as interactive maybe as some of those other meetings could be. I guess that would be my kind of takeaway.
We have some feedback from Mel Young and then also in the chat.
Okay.
I guess I'll say the same thing. I echo that because as you guys probably have known for 4 years, I'm pretty excited when we share about the personal support worker at PACE, and there's always going on. And with Sherry being on our helm, we have done new things at PACE, and we would love to share with everyone what we have moved forward at PACE and what new things that we do, especially for the personal support worker program. We continue to look into a lot of things that's new and progressive. So, but again, it is also that if you just want to spend 2 hours with me, and I do talk a lot, so it's not me, but I do have some stuff, so
Well, if all your enthusiasm rubs off on us, I think it could be of benefit. Thank you.
And then the comment is from the director of GROW, which is a mental health-focused agency. She says, you are welcome at any of the GROW board meetings and welcome to attend any of our community groups. They're in person, dial-in, or Zoom. So, and just P.S., GROW is where we learned that we could do meetings virtually through Zoom years and years and years ago. So, okay.
Okay, very good.
I do have a couple.
Okay.
So, we are involved with the State Association of Mental Health and Mental Health Boards, Developmental Disabilities Boards, and Public Health Boards, but the Evanston Mental Health Board is quite a mystery to us. There are a lot of things we don't know about, including, did they have staff? They did.
Yeah, so they had, this was actually when they had a township, but they don't have a township anymore. And this was in the early 2010s, so I was on the board from 2009 till about 2013, so 5 years. One and a little bit more of a cycle. And they had a staff member who was like the public health director, and then Jonathan Webb, he's actually in charge of, he works in D.C. now, but he was, so I'm not sure if they have staff now as well, but he was a part of the public health district there, and he was the direct staff liaison. And so it was very similar to, he was in charge, we did not have a DD board, it was DD and mental health was served under a mental health board. So it's just one staff member who kind of was your role, Lynn. And then there was a person who was like Stephanie, and there might, I think there might have been another staff member. So yeah, they did have staff. I'm not sure currently if they have staff. So it's interesting that they don't seem to associate with the state or organization.
Well, there's a lot of turmoil this year because there are so many new mental health boards, and this is obviously people realize their communities need a stronger system of community-based mental health care, so that's all good, but the way they're coming about is very haphazard and somewhat, it's stoking some political conflict that I feel like does not belong in the mental health space. So we're not banging on the door of Evanston to find out what's going on with their mental health board. We're really celebrating, like, we need to be local authorities and make decisions that are relevant to our communities and then be respectful of that with each other. But that said, when I came into this role in 2016, there was a very big discussion among our membership about this liaison practice and that some of the northern boards were stopping it because of the appearance of conflict of interest that it created among board members who would be deeply involved with an agency and then lobbying for them when it was decision time. So they were moving away from that practice. And we talked about this at the mental health board at the time. And, you know, mental health board members felt like, well, we know where we're coming from, and we are grown-ups and we can do this, but and also not be biased. And so they chose to continue doing the liaison engagements, but to make it really informal, so that it's just, here's the list of board meeting times of agencies. If you want to go to a board meeting, you know you have to kind of let them know in advance. But the invitation that they're all talking about sounds much more consistent with what you said, and I don't know. It's not really a liaison practice. That's really just a kind of getting to know you, and maybe we don't make enough time in this context for agencies to present on all the things that they do. So it's possible we could change the way we do board meetings if you all did not want to have the extra, but it sounds like keeping it informal is a popular decision right now. Okay.
Well, it sounds like, you know, maybe if the providers have something that they would like us to see, then, you know, an invitation would be appreciated and anybody could respond to that. So why don't we just leave it at that for right now? Would that be acceptable to all of you? Okay. All right, then. Oh, where are we? Champaign Mental Health Board input? You just did it. Okay. Board announcements. Anybody have an announcement? No? All right, I'm just zooming through this. Okay, other business is the review of closed session minutes. If anybody needs to discuss, I think we need to go into closed session.
If we need to go into closed session to discuss, I might start crying because it requires a recording in a separate room while this recording continues.
Oh,
I did bring a second computer for that purpose, but I also hoped that people would ask me in advance so that we wouldn't have to have a closed session discussion about the closed session minutes. So you can.
I had
you
no
can
questions.
If you want to.
I had no questions.
I mean, you absolutely can if you want to. But
okay, I have a question. Why is this even on the agenda? And I was.
It's required by the
Open
required. Meetings Act, and
okay.
you are ineligible to even
I
know
the I
matter.
I was told not to be involved
yeah.
anyway, which I totally disagreed with, but I
right.
complied with that. So, okay, it's required.
It's required every 6 months by the Open Meetings Act that a public body that has any closed session minutes that are older than 18 months, from a meeting older than 18 months ago, that those minutes be reviewed every 6 months and the board approve continuing to keep them closed or revise them or go into closed session and discuss them or bring them into, stop keeping them closed, but the attorneys have recommended that we continue to keep them closed, and that will probably continue for a long time. So
we need, this is an action item.
It
yes.
is.
Yeah. It is an action item.
Okay.
I don't see any reason to go into a closed meeting. I think that the information provided was sufficient to not need further discussion. And I wasn't involved 18 months ago, but
nor was I.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can absolutely call me or email me later if you have any questions about the matter. Yeah.
No, okay. I have no questions.
Okay.
It's fine. I will entertain a motion to approve keeping those meeting minutes closed. Yeah?
I will make the motion to keep those minutes closed.
Thank you, Georgiana. Do we have a second?
Second.
You can't vote or
oh, sorry.
I'll second.
I can't even vote about
I thought
keeping
there was
the
a,
minutes closed.
There
this
was a second
oh.
already, right?
No.
Oh.
Kim.
Okay.
Who can't vote? Just Anne?
Dan.
Okay. All right then. Okay, are we ready for a vote then? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
I think we're done.
Okay.
We are adjourned at, well, that went longer than I thought.
I'm sorry.
10:27.
Thank you all for your patience.
We had some good discussion.
We did.
It was relaxed because we didn't have any heavy-duty decisions.
I thought it was a great
meeting,
so it was relaxed. I have to tell you, and I'm going to tell Lynn,